Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Click It Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. Okay, the numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are for September 2008, and we're going to be talking about the top 100 trades through Diamond to comic book retailers for the month. And, you know, this is getting to where it's almost the same old, Chris, because we got a roughly three-way split on the trade side again between DC, Marvel, and everybody else. You know, it seems like more often than not, that's what happens. The exact percentages fluctuate a little, and in this case, looking at the total units sold for the top 100, 34.7% of them went to DC, 27.43% went to Marvel, and 37.87% went to everybody else, with 13.36% of the total being just for Dark Horse. So it accounted for about a third of that, you know, third, if you will, so. Not a bad month for Dark Horse overall, and obviously a good one for DC, and not too bad for Marvel either.
Yeah, it seems like Marvel, I mean, they have, 26 new items and 6 reorder items. But looking at the release schedule from week to week to week, and when I ramble off what's coming off on my podcast, it seems like Marvel always has the bulk of the trade paperbacks. And conversely, on the comic side, you know, it seems like they've got a lot more stock these days than companies like DC or Dark Horse.
Well, Marvel's certainly cranking stuff out, and I know what you mean on the trade side, because I was looking at the solicitations for the previews that just came out. And, like, everything for, I guess, some of the Secret Invasion stuff, was it? For one of the events was just thump, here it all is. And it just seemed like the trade section of the solicitation for Marvel just went page after page after page after page.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, surely in a couple of months when all that comes out, we're just going to see Marvel shoot through the roof in terms of trade sales. But I think a lot of it comes down to they're much more aggressive and quick on compiling stuff into collected editions, be it trade and or hardcovers, than DC is.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen cases where the turnaround time from the end of a miniseries to the collection being released is as short as 2 weeks. Possibly shorter, but I know there was one that was 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think it was Ultimate Human. And it was funny because the solicitation originally, we had them, had the fourth issue and the collected edition coming out the same day. They revised
right.
That. That's a little quick.
That's quick, right, yeah.
So, but yeah, with over a quarter of the items on the list being new items from Marvel, and, you know, once you factor in the reorders, it's nearly a third of the list. I mean, of course, they're going to do, you know, a decent percentage.
Well, yeah, like you said, I mean, all the Secret Invasion trades are solicited when I don't think issue 7 has been released yet.
It was released last week.
Last week, okay. And then you look at, like, a 52, for example, and how DC said they're going to wait until the entire 52 series has ended to bring out the first trade paperback. Well, that's a year.
Yeah.
You know, really. And so DC is, that's just their philosophy, I guess. But Marvel is much quicker in getting their stuff released.
Well, a case could be made that 52 is a little bit of an exception because of the nature of the project, whatever. But then you look at titles like Gotham Central, Manhunter, and a few of the others that haven't been fully collected into trades yet. You know, they're going on a much more relaxed schedule there, either because they don't think there's the demand or, you know, whatever other reasons.
You know what they're cranking out, though? Green Lantern.
Do you blame them?
Yeah, I don't blame them at all, but it's one of those titles where it seems like that a new trade is coming out every other week for that character, whether it be a classic or the new run or the core. Or whatever. I mean, they just had one come out last week, as a matter of fact, a compilation of stories.
I think that's a smart move. I think Geoff Johns has gotten that title just incredibly hot. There's a lot of buzz around it, both in terms of the Sinestro Corps War from last year, the Darkest Night stuff that's coming up.
Rage.
Yeah, Rage of the Red Lanterns. It's about to start. So if they can leverage that into, you know, trade paperback sales for older material, that's great. That's smart marketing. That's a good move all the way around. You know, and there's tons of great Green Lantern stories to be read.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But it is interesting to look at the differences in the strategy the two companies have for collecting things to trade. And also sometimes just how the smaller companies do it. Because with the smaller press stuff, it's pretty much guaranteed any miniseries they do. And let's face it, most things coming out from the smaller publishers are trending towards a miniseries format. It's gonna get collected. And usually pretty quickly. You know, but I think there, it's more of a, I don't want to say financial necessity, but, I mean, you look at where single-issue sales are for the smaller publishers and the cost of the content production. They need to recoup that. They need to kind of, I don't want to say cash in, because that sounds fairly crass, but they need to get that money in the trade format as quickly as possible. So I think that's why we see, you know, a lot of the smaller press stuff getting into trade as fast as it does.
Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting how many of the publishers only had one item on the top 100 list this month.
Right.
You know, Fantagraphics, Gemstone, Del Rey, Avatar, Oni, Big City, Harris. And, I mean, part of it is, you know, again, with Marvel and DC and Dark Horse right there, that's just about three-quarters of the list. So there's just not much room for anyone else, which, again, yeah. Diamond needs to expand the length of this list.
And, right. Yeah, we talk about that every month. Yeah.
And they still haven't done it. I am under no delusions that they're listening to this thinking, wow, that's a brilliant idea. We should do that. They're not. I'd like it if they would, but, you know, hey. I'll work with the data we got, see if I can work on getting more data as time and resources permit, but it's wild.
Well, real quick, looking at the reorder items for Dark Horse, I noticed that there are two Star Wars titles, the first Clone Wars book and also The Force Unleashed, which yeah. I am really not surprised that both of those are the reorder items.
Well, particularly with the Clone Wars series having started up on, I guess, Cartoon Network.
Network, yeah.
Have you been watching that?
I have been watching it. I have.
I have too. What do you think?
I kind of like it. Yeah, I like it. It's okay.
I was a little underwhelmed by the theatrical movie they did, but for a half hour thing.
That really was just the big pilot show for the TV series.
Yeah, but it was too long.
It was too long, yeah.
Whereas the half hour episodes are tighter and they're more in and out, you know, with the story kind of, you know, and it just works better with that kind of focus. Whereas the pilot movie or whatever, just it meandered.
I guess, you know, the one problem I'm having with it, and this is because I'm a old Star Wars junkie, and so are you, you know, growing up in the 70s, was that the last episode that I've seen had to deal with the clone troopers, right?
Uh-huh.
And they're all on that one base, and they're all protecting it from General Grievous and everything. But they're... I think Lucas is trying to convey to us to almost feel sorry for these clone troopers, that they're going to be brainwashed with Order 66. And, you know, we're growing up watching the first Star Wars movie, they were all just a bunch of Nazi drones that we didn't care about. We wanted them dead. But now it's kind of like, oh, there's Commander Cody, and they all have names to each other now, and Rex, and everything, and now when the article gets passed, I think we're supposed to feel sorry for these characters being turned into the drones.
Well, it comes down to, you know, and this is more, you know, story stuff than the number stuff, but what the hell, let's go with it. They flipped the sides on us because, you know, with the classic movies, it was, you know, the rebellion and the evil empire that the stormtroopers were with.
Right.
And now, because we're further back in time, you know, where that ancient religion of the Jedi is still very active, because it's only been, you know, like 10, 20 years, that the clone troopers are the good guys, you know, we're still with the Republic and all of that. And that kind of switching of the white hats and the black hats, so to speak, it's just kind of weird.
Right.
You know, I understand why they did it, but unless we see that transition and the change of the Republic to the Empire and the Separatists to the Rebellion and a lot of people kind of switching sides, You know, I don't know that that transition really kind of worked.
Right.
But certainly with the cartoon going on, and again, the DVDs, everything like that, yeah, it's not the least bit surprising Dark Horse is doing really well with the Star Wars property right now. Now, it's going to be interesting to see how well the Vector crossover stuff does when it gets collected. And because I've been reading that, and it's good, it's fun, but it's also not really gotten me hooked on the other titles and, you know, expanding my pull list in that respect.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
But certainly Dark Horse, well, I mean, and it's not just Star Wars. Dark Horse is doing really good with their other licensed property of Buffy. You know, we see in rank 10 here the fifth omnibus for Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Now, again, Dark Horse Omnibus is a trade paperback versus the Marvel use of the term, you know, gargantuan hardcover or whatever. But still, I mean, that fifth Omnibus for Buffy did over 3,900 units, which for a trade paperback these days is really good.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about this a little before we started recording, and I'll go ahead and mention it now. Once you get to rank 49... which is less than halfway down the list. Okay, not a whole lot less, but still less. Things are selling under 2,000 units. Now, I don't know exactly how many comic book stores are out there, but generally the number that gets bandied about is at least 2,000. It's usually 2,500 or 3,000. At one point, not all that long ago, it was up around 3,600. But let's say 2,500 for purposes of discussion. Worst case, 2,000. That means half the items on this list this month for September didn't go to every store, at least through Diamond. Now, granted, some stores are using other distributors. There are other ways they can get these books, maybe at a better discount, better returnability, or not better returnability, but returnability to begin with. So this is not a complete picture within the comic book stores, and certainly isn't touching the mass market, the Barnes & Nobles, the Borders, the Amazon.com, and those venues. But I believe that the core audience for comic books, both on the monthly side and on the collected edition side, that the hardcore fans, the buyers, the reliable ones that support the industry are going through comic book stores, be it in person, you know, every Wednesday when they go to the store, or over the internet, because like I know I shop at a discount comic book service, as does Bob.
As does me, right.
Yeah, you do that. You've also dealt with Forbidden Planet International.
Mm-hmm.
But be it online or in person, all of that is still going less so with Forbidden Planet International, because they would presumably be dealing with Diamond UK, which is not in these numbers. But at least here in the States, everything else, you know, is in theory showing up on these numbers for the most part. Again, with the caveat that not all retailers are getting everything of theirs through Diamond. Because, again, if they can get returnability for a slightly less discount, the same discount, or in a few cases a better discount, hell, I mean, they certainly should, you know?
So do you think – there's a couple of factors there too. I mean, and let me use Marvel as an example. Do you think, like, looking down the list at number 85, like Omega the Unknown, which is a premier hardcover at $30, you know, at 1,379 units. Do you think if that was a simple trade paperback at $18 that it would have sold over 2,000 then? Can you gauge that?
Well, in this particular case, because this is the new Omega the Unknown, not the original, correct?
Yeah. Well, what I mean, or Legacy of Doom or whatever. I mean, what I mean is, you know, do some of these deserve a hardcover at that price, or would they be better off getting more units at a lower price?
Well, it's a double-edged sword, and you could look at it from both angles. Obviously, if Omega the Unknown was a cheaper trade paperback at half that price, there are probably some people who said, there's no way in hell I'm going to pay $30, but 15? Yeah, maybe. But there's also no guarantee that a cheaper price would have gotten it.
Right.
I think that particular thing of Omega the Unknown was such a niche product, so to speak, that there are a lot of people, myself included, that you could have given it to me for $5 and I doubt I would have bid at that price.
Yeah.
I think there's part of it. And the other part is, I think, when they decide to, should we do this as a trade, should we do this as hardcover, premier hardcover, or what have you, that they're able to realistically estimate how much they're going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have to imagine that, particularly at Marvel and DC, and perhaps not at the other companies, but certainly Marvel and DC, they have to have people who are doing much better tracking of these sales things than I could ever hope to, partially because they're working with a lot more data. They're working with more granular data, potentially, or not potentially, probably, almost certainly, I would think, with DC, that they should be able to say, okay, Omega the Unknown, Iron Man Legacy of Doom, or JSA Presents Green Lantern. They know how the monthly's sold. They know how that format sells, all that kind of a thing, and kind of where the pain threshold is for various, you know, hardcovers, trades, whatever. That they're going to say, no matter what format we put it out in, it's probably not going to do above X, and we need to make Y dollars. Therefore, we need to charge so much. And if we're going to charge that much, well, it almost necessitates it being a hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, what have you. So I think in some cases, they're working from the, we want to do this as a collection, but it's not going to sell that great, so we'll do it as a trade, but maybe a little bit more expensive trade than the average. Or it's going to sell X amount, so we're going to do it as a hardcover and just get what we can, with no plans of ever doing a trade. In other cases, they're going to do the hardcover and do the trade later or vice versa, depending, again, how they think they can make the most money.
Well, along those same lines, too, you look at a book like Why the Last Man that's coming in at number 70. This volume one is a reorder item. What is that, 25 months on the list here?
Prior to this, yeah.
Prior to this, and it's still coming in at 1,600 units. But as you know, just this past 2 weeks, Why the Last Man, the hardcover, just came out.
I got it sitting downstairs, yeah.
Yeah, but there's still a market for these trade paperbacks, and maybe there's just uneducated consumers out there that don't know about the hardcover coming out, and they're like, oh, I'm going to go get the trade.
I don't think it's that, because I think part of it is also a barrier to entry in terms of the price.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people that a retailer is going to have a much easier time convincing them to try it if it's a $12.99 trade paperback versus how much was the hardcover. I don't even remember off the top of my head.
I want to say $20, $25.
Something like that, yeah. Now, granted, it's twice the material, et cetera.
Well, with a discount at $13, you're going to get it under $10.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you walk in anywhere, it's on sale somewhere for $9.99 even.
Probably.
Probably. That's just a guess.
Well, and this is the kind of thing where it behooves a comic book retailer to consider doing that. I know some retailers are dead set against discounting, and I understand that. But if you've got a bookshelf where you've got all 10 trades sitting on your shelf, and you got somebody thinking, oh, should I get it or not? And you can get them hooked at that first one, which is already going to be cheaper than the others because it's $12.99 versus $14.99. And you say, hey, I'm going to give you a couple of bucks off to give it a try, see if you like it, sort of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You lose a little money potentially, or don't make the maximum you could, I should say, on that first volume. But you've got those other 9 volumes that if you are able to target it to the right people, and therefore you're doing this for the ones that are more likely to get those other 9, the couple of bucks you don't make off that first one pay for itself in terms of selling the other 9 down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a big picture kind of a thing. Some retailers are great at that, others not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an easy thing to do either. But I would certainly say if I were running a comic book store, there are a couple of titles I would want to have at least a copy, if not maybe 2 or 3, depending on the nature of the store, et cetera, of every trade paperback sitting on the shelf of, and Why the Last Man is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
From Vertigo, I would say Why the Last Man, and certainly Fables, obviously Sandman.
Right. Get Ultimate Spider-Man in there. You get Green Lantern right now.
Well, Green Lantern I would certainly have, but I don't know if I would have all of them.
No, right. Some of the newer stuff, though.
Right.
You know.
But there comes a point where, like with Ultimate Spider-Man, I would try to have at least one of everything and a couple of that first, to where the people realize that, hey, try this, get in, see if you like it. If so, I can fill your desire for the rest as quickly as you want them. You know, because if people see that you've only got the first and then the third and the eighth or the 12th or what have you, there's that much less incentive to pick up that first volume, at least from you if they're expecting to get all of their stuff from you. I mean, that's one of the sales variables that I think a lot of people never stop to think about in terms of how these sales for Why the Last Man Volume 1 trade paperback are going to influence the sales of all the other ones, and how the sales of all the other ones and the presence on store shelves in turn goes back and influences the sales of that first volume.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing is in isolation here. And it's easy for people to look at things with tunnel vision sometimes.
Oh, and I see that volume 10 is just five lines below it.
Yeah. And I expect when we see the year-end numbers in a couple of months that we may see the other eight volumes, you know, the full run potentially showing up.
On the top 100 or top 200, yeah.
A top 200, certainly if they go for 300, that's viable. They vary how much they do at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I expect Why the Last Man, certainly Walking Dead, probably Naruto, and maybe the Star Wars, Clone Wars stuff that's not showing up every month but is potentially flying just below the radar of the top 100, to be doing a lot more reorder activity that we're not seeing, and therefore, you know, come surprisingly high.
The Conan stuff gets reordered.
Yeah. I mean, I always find the end of year stuff very interesting for that purpose of just, it gives a sense of what's been selling over the last year that we just, again, don't have that visibility into.
You know, speaking of no incentive, if I can just go on a tangent.
Sure.
If you look above Why the Last Man, Absolute Ronin, $99, just over 1,600 units. That's nothing. I'm sure DC mispriced that book.
Well, that's one of those things, though, that it's Frank Miller. Frank Miller is hot. I mean, not just because he's Frank Miller, but he's now Frank Miller, the director.
Yeah.
Come, you know, when The Spirit comes out, some of that stuff. You know, there may be a lot of people think, oh, I got to get everything he's ever done.
But Ronin's good, but it's not $99 good. This should be $75.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that at all, but it's also one of his more obscure works, so to speak.
It is.
And there's no reason to have expected it to have had a huge demand at any price, necessarily. Because
mm-hmm.
It's been available in trade for quite some time.
Oh, you can always find back issues at any con you go to.
Yeah.
It's always there.
It's kind of his forgotten or ignored work, comparatively.
Yeah.
Of course, when you're comparing against, you know, Dark Knight, Sin City, 300, you know, it's Elektra. It's tough competition, too.
Right. Well, that's the thing. You don't go up to somebody and say, hey, if you like Dark Knight Returns, you know, you always say, check out this, this, and this, and this before you say Ronin. I mean, Ronin's one of the last things you say to somebody who wants to have more Frank Miller.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you even say it at all.
I was going to say, I'd be hard-pressed to name anyone who's ever suggested I pick up Ronin, you know?
Don't read that Daredevil yet just yet. Read Ronin first, you know? It's like, come on.
Frankly, it seems to more often be referenced in terms of have you ever heard of versus have you read and oh, you ought to.
Yeah.
And it's no knock against the property. It's just that so much of his other stuff is so good.
Right. But even when it was solicited, it was like, you know, what the hell? $99. It's like, really?
Six issue series? I mean, yeah, it was prestige though, right? Wasn't it?
I think it was. Yeah, it was like 42 pages a book or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It still seems harsh for $99.
It does. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I'm just joking around, but yeah.
Yeah, but again, you're going to do it in an absolute format. There's a lower point that you've got to say it's got to be priced this high or higher. And you're right, 75 is about as low as they could have gone for it to be an absolute.
Well, I don't think there's been an absolute lower than 75.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think Hush was 75, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. The other thing that I found really interesting this month, and we talked about this a bit last month. Top of the list, highest selling item is Watchmen. Gee, no surprise, there's this whole movie coming out.
Right.
But what's interesting is this month it only did, and it feels funny to be using the word only
yeah.
On the trade list when something sells 8,133 units, because typically that's not only top selling, but, you know, strong sales. And it pales in comparison to how it did last month with the, 42,000 or whatever it was. But we're still at the point where the consignment program is in full swing. These copies are free to retailers. They may have to pay the shipping, actually, but that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Fully returnable if they return them in the month of December. So for minimal risk, stores can have really as many copies as they want, as near as I can tell. And certainly a lot of stores took excellent advantage of that last month. And, you know, here we're at, we're only seeing, you know, another, you know, 8,100 plus units going into stores. Now, there are a number of ways you could interpret this. You could say, well, that means that that many copies flew off store shelves and stores said, oh, we should restock or whatever. Don't know that I buy that, because I think a lot of stores, I know Austin Books here locally, they were incredibly aggressive when it came to stocking it. They had an entire bookcase filled with it, and we estimated, what, 300 copies or so?
Yeah, that picture is pretty cool, I have to say.
Yeah, and they had other copies elsewhere in the store. That was
right.
Just the one bookcase. So I certainly don't think that they're expecting to maintain that much on hand. And they're thinking that, okay, we're going to let it kind of dwindle down to what we think we can sell on a routine basis or whatever come the end of the holiday season. But approximately a million copies reportedly in print of Watchmen right now, only a little over 8,000 copies going through Diamond to comic book retail stores in September.
Mm-hmm.
That seems low.
Yeah.
You know, it implies a saturation point may already have been hit, and it makes me question, is the direct market really meeting the true demand, potential demand, however you want to phrase it, for some of these properties? You know, are there only so many people interested in some of this stuff, or is there a larger market out there that for whatever reason the direct market isn't able to tap into?
Do you think the economy has got something to do with it too, with using, you know, discretionary income for comics? I always bring that up every once in a while, mostly because the items that I do on my show and my blog are all higher ticket items, like an Absolute or a Premier hardcover or Marvel Masterwork.
Well, certainly with an Absolute, like that $99 Ronin one, I gotta figure the economy comes into play, because that's a lot of money to put down on a single item.
Right.
You know, at that full retail price, that's about as much, sometimes more, sometimes less, as I spend on comics after discount in a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm an easy mark for comics, and I would be reluctant to spend that much on a single item. Certainly with the economy the way it is right now, you know, in that respect, I'm not surprised sales are either a little sluggish or just down or whatever, but I think there's a little bit more to it than that. Certainly, that's got to be a major factor. If people are deciding, am I going to put a tank of gas in my car, or am I going to go pick up one of these Premier hardcovers, they're probably going to fill up the gas tank first.
Or am I going to fill up my car on the way to the comic book store and spend less?
Well, I mean, people gotta meet the necessities of life first, and comics are not one of them.
Right. I know my bill has gone down.
Yeah. Well, for me, it fluctuates based on what all is being offered and things like that. There are some months where, you know, even if I indulge myself to the fullest, I feel like it's a light month because there's not that much that interests me. Other months, it's like, wow, they're coming out with weight stuff. But the problem I'm seeing is 7 million plus copies of the Iron Man DVD were sold within the first few weeks of release.
And that's, what, $25?
Let's say 20. Let's say you get it at a good price. Maybe even 16 if you get it at a Walmart or whatever.
And the Hulk comes out. That's on DVD, you know.
Well, just the Blu-ray for Iron Man was over 500,000 copies.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I certainly, and Bob and I talked about this on the comics side, I certainly don't expect every one of the people who buy Hulk or Iron Man or Hellboy or Wanted or Dark Knight when it comes out, or any of the other things that have come out over the last, you know, 6 months or whatever in the theaters now on DVD that are based on comic books, I do not expect all of them to suddenly flock to comic book stores. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need all of them to. We need, on the comic book side, a single percent to double the sales of most books.
Yeah, yeah, 1%. Yeah, exactly.
On the trade side, I would argue a tenth of a percent, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the number of copies of the Blu-ray Iron Man movie that came out, again, 500,000, one movie in one format, that's twice what everything combined sold on the top 100 trades for September.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're talking in a different scale here. And there's nothing that's pushing that audience towards these books. There's nothing saying, hey, you know, here's a couple of pages, here's a mini version of an issue of Iron Man or the Hulk or Hellboy or whatever. To get the rest, go to your local comic book store. Don't know where it is? Hey, try this, and here's how to go find one.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly with Hellboy, we saw a bump of all the trades popping up on the list on the 1 month. With 300, we saw a direct translation of that. Same with a bit of Sin City and some of that. We're seeing a little of it now with some of the Batman items on the list.
Mm-hmm.
But that's incidental spillover versus a targeted marketing campaign. I really have to think that, you know, looking at that $7 million for Iron Man, I have no idea how well Dark Knight's going to do when it hits DVD, but I could see it doing about as well. Watchmen, when it hits the theaters in March, when it hits DVD around maybe this time next year, you know, the numbers on those are going to be staggering.
Mm-hmm. Oh, even James Bond is going to be staggering, I think.
Yeah, and I've got to think there's a crossover in interest between moviegoers and comic book readers. And again, even if there's only literally a single percent of those people that would be, you know, able to be converted into comic book readers, wow, that could really, you know, be a huge influx of customers.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I'm at the point of wondering, particularly with this Watchmen thing. I mean, with the other trades on this list, you've got to factor in, did comic book retailers just get them through a different channel than Diamond for the returnability, for a better discount, for the combination, for some other reason. Watchmen is still on consignment. It's returnable. It's free, except, again, maybe for the shipping. Where's the downside? I can't imagine a retailer possibly getting a better deal for getting Watchmen into their store right now than through Diamond and this consignment program that DC has set up.
Yeah, in fact, I kind of joked on my blog this week that, you know, when the numbers came down, that Watchmen was number one. It's like, but what's number two? You know, that's the new number one is number two kind of thing, because Watchmen is going to be up there for the foreseeable future.
Oh, maybe not. And,
well, yeah, maybe not. But then that'll be interesting to see when it does go off number one.
Yeah. Well, I think the more telling factor is going to be when it drops off the top 100.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm not expecting that anytime soon.
Right.
But it could happen either, because it does literally hit a saturation point. I mean, it could be that once the movie comes out, the bookstores are pushing it hard.
Everybody will have a copy.
Yeah, everybody will have a copy. I mean, how many comic readers are there out there?
Yeah.
Now, it'd be interesting to see, and I do not have access to these numbers, but I wish I did, to see how a movie, when it comes out, how that impacts, say, the novelization of it. And then, you know, how it impacts, again, the graphic novelization of it. Because with this million copies or so of Watchmen in print, the graphic novel, I gotta think they're gonna do a prose novel of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they do it for every other movie, it seems like. It'll be interesting to see how that sells, both compared to the movie, the DVD, and the graphic novel. I just think that, again, we're looking at such a small subset of the potential audience and the potential demand out there that it's, you know, it's a bit staggering, because, you know, you look at how Iron Man did on the monthly side, and Iron Man Director of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 33 did 43,874 units, and Invincible Iron Man, which is more along the lines of the movie, did 60,427 units. So again, 1% doubles the sales of that Invincible Iron Man.
What's the series that Favreau worked on?
That is Iron Man Viva Las Vegas. Only two issues have come out.
And how is that doing? I'm just asking because, you know, he, as a director, you think he might have more influence on, you know, with his name on the title of the book. It's just one of those things that perhaps, you know, that'll bump up sales maybe.
Well, I think it would bump up sales if it was out and available in trade paperback, particularly right now.
Yeah, but you do, I mean, what I mean is you take his name off of it and you wonder if that's going to be even better sales or less sales. Did his name on the comic have an impact, being that his name was also attached to the movie?
The first issue did, let's see, 35,142 or so units. So I'm going to say no, it didn't have any impact.
Okay.
Or if so, it had, I don't say a detrimental impact, because that Director of S.H.I.E.L.D. issue I was quoting the numbers for is actually up about 28% from the previous issue because of the whole Secret Invasion, all that kind of stuff. typically. The 35,000 or so that Viva Las Vegas number one did, it's about average for an Iron Man run-of-the-mill issue, if you will.
Now, which one is turning into War Machine?
Director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Director? Okay.
It's going Iron Man, Director of S.H.I.E.L.D. to War Machine, Weapon of S.H.I.E.L.D. to just War Machine with a new number one after an issue or two or something.
Oh, really? It's going to go number one?
I believe so. I believe that's in the new previews that just came out.
Okay.
It just seems to me that the trade stuff, we get, again, a couple of items that do that 5,000 or more. In this case, we had three. Watchmen, 100 Bullets, Volume 12, and the reorder for the first volume, the Star Wars Clone Wars. And actually, no, Naruto Volume 31 also was above 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Then we drop below that 5,000, and then it's really not all that much later where suddenly, you know, not every store is even getting a copy on average.
Mm-hmm.
And when you factor in some stores are getting multiple copies of some trades, there are a lot of stores that aren't bothering with every trade. And certainly I think that's a smart move because not every store needs every trade.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one that I saw as a really good sign in terms of the way it's selling is the second volume of the Immortal Iron Fist trade paperback. This is the Cities of Heaven storyline. Came in at rank number 9, and it did 3,920 units, and that's up a little over 200 units from the total reported sales of the first volume, which was only 3,712 units. And this goes back to, you get a high-profile creative team of Brubaker and Fraction working their magic on what prior to this had been arguably an obscure character that was not highly marketable.
Mm-hmm.
And man, they just light that puppy on fire. They did more for the long-term sales potential for Iron Fist than probably anyone has done since the 70s. You know, both in terms of how that the monthly sales were going, how these trade paperback sales are going. Certainly, it didn't hit the top of the charts, but it has shown that the character is commercially viable and can sustain a series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm reading the Essential Iron Fist right now. I think it's pretty good. It's not that bad.
That's the Power Man and Iron Fist one?
Well, this is just the Iron Fist one.
Oh, just the Iron Fist one. Okay.
But it's going to move into Power Man and Iron Fist, and I'm almost on top of that. I've got a few more issues to go in Iron Fist before I move on to the next volume.
I've been buying back issues lately, and some of what I've been getting is Power Man and Iron Fist. I started with about issue 50 and said, okay, let's get the rest. Because I had like 125 or something. Whatever the Secret Wars 2 crossover was, that's what I had.
Yeah.
And they had them at a good price at mycomicshop.com. Easy mark for this stuff, like I've said.
Oh, yeah. What's a back issue for that running these days for Power Man, Iron Fist?
Not all that much. And, you know, that's another thing that I don't think a lot of people kind of factor in terms of what's the value of knowing how some of the stuff sells. Well, if you know how the comic book is selling, you know how hard it may or may not be to get in a back issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, obviously this is less true for the trades and stuff, but, you know, if you're looking at something that's selling 6,000 copies versus 60,000 versus whatever, you can factor in, you know, how easy or hard it's going to be. And a lot of these Power Man and Iron Fists, and these are back, you know, late 70s, early 80s, they had for like $1.34 in fine or very fine, or in some cases getting up towards near mint. So, I mean, these things were highly affordable. And, you know, the way it works for me is the cheaper it is, the less discerning I tend to be on my spending,
mm-hmm.
which is really bad. Scanning through the stuff over on my comic shop right now to see if any of these have the tag for the statement of ownership, because that would give us the print run from that point, and that would give us an idea of how the title was selling back then. And I'm not seeing any at the moment, which is unfortunate. Because I'm curious, again, how that's selling compared to, you know, both how that trade sold and how the title is selling on a monthly basis now. And nope, not a one. Bummer. But again, $1.34 for some of these things.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those that I tend to prefer single issues to trades and collected editions. I know you tend to be more on the collected edition side.
Yeah.
But man, for some of these, it's actually cheaper to go get the back issues.
Right.
You know, which I just find fascinating. Certainly not in all cases. There have been a number of times where, you know, I'll get the trade because there's no way in hell I'm ever going to pay the price that people seem to want for the back issues, but there have been a couple of cases, particularly with some of the essentials I've gotten, and admittedly I've only got a handful, where I'll wind up actually going and getting all the issues that are in the essential. I think I did that for Nova, and I still need to check for that first volume of Power Man and Iron Fist and make sure I've got all of the issues I need, and once I do, I may give that away as a contest thing for the podcast.
You could probably do the same with the second volume of Silver Surfer that run in the early to mid-80s.
I've got the whole run of the 80s thing, so I didn't pick up the essential.
Do you? Yeah, see? Yeah.
I only have like six essentials, the Nova, the Power Man and Iron Fist Volume 1, Godzilla, Savage She-Hulk, I think, and that may be it. I mean, like I said, I don't have many. I don't really care for the black and white reprint version.
No. So. Do you have the Moon Knight one, or do you have all the Moon Knight in comic form?
I picked up the Moon Knight stuff starting in the mid-80s or whatever, so the Mark Spector Moon Knight series. I don't think I've got the Moon Knight essentials, but there's stuff that would be collected in there that I don't have.
Mm-hmm. The Punisher one is a good one to have, just because... You know, he never really had his own title. He was spread across so many Spider-Man titles and Captain America Captain America and a couple other books.
Now, have they slowed down the output of Essentials?
Yeah, they have.
Because I was going to say, in September, only one made the list of the top 100.
Yeah, and this new round of solicitations that came out just not long ago, only one new Essential. Because you know what they're doing? They're reprinting a lot of them with the new trade dress that they have for them.
Ah.
So they're you know, one brand new Essential and then... a reissue of like Wolverine number one or Thor number one or something like that.
Yeah, because the only one that made the list, and this was one that I picked up actually, was the Essential Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe Master Edition, Volume 3. But that only sold, you know, like just over 1,500 units, which is understandable. Again, it's...
That's for hardcore guys, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, that still outsold a number of other things on the list because it was at rank 78.
Mm-hmm. I still would like those in color.
Oh, you and me both.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about getting my spare copies of the original edition of the Marvel Handbook and the deluxe edition, getting those in, having them bound by library binding or something like that.
I got the first edition bound. I like it. I like it a lot. I got to get the other deluxe edition and the 89 update bound together.
Because I'm pretty sure I have a second set of all of that. I just have never gotten around to digging those out of the drawer boxes and sending them off to get bound. But that and Who's Who is probably what I would go get bound.
Yeah, I've got Who's Who as well. I haven't bound that yet. I'm looking to do it, though.
But, again, it's one of those things that... Are they ever going to do a showcase of the Who's Who stuff? I know they promised that, like, 2 years ago.
They announced it, just never officially solicited it, so...
But, I mean, these days, you could go... You could get the copy of Who's Who... from an online place. Again, I tend to use mycomicshop.com because they just have great prices. You know, then go get it bound into a hardcover and probably still pay less than you would pay for an equivalent hardcover.
Yeah, you might.
Because they seem to have these at near mint for $1.49 in a lot of cases, $2.40 in some. So you wait till a code word hits that covers the last half of the DC stuff. You're going to get another couple of percent off. You don't necessarily have to get them in the near mint. You can get a slightly lower grade, cut a couple of bucks off there. You know, something to think about.
So what else, my man?
There are a few things I marked. Let me see if any of them I still want to talk about. Walking Dead popped back up on the list with the first volume moving 3,756 units. Volume 8 also showed up with 1,379 units. And there were only, I think, two other items for Image on the list this month. So Kirkman's still doing pretty good for Image these days. The other two things were Madame Mirage, number one, and the Spawn Collection, volume 6.
Mm-hmm.
But the Walking Dead, that first and eighth, accounted for about two-thirds of the trade sales on the top 100 for Image.
Did you see the Bad Boy 10th Anniversary book? Did you actually get a chance to look at that?
No, I have not.
It's oversized. It's a big book, but it's like only like 74 pages or something like that. I mean, it's... I'm going to see if you got it written up here, how big it is, but no, you don't. But it's like this oversized volume, but it's really thin. It's a very weird-looking product.
It doesn't make sense to me when they do something that's either physically big or just hardcover and has a very thin page count.
Yeah.
It just seems a little backwards.
I didn't even know if it was going to be oversized. I mean, I thought it was just going to be a normal hardcover size. But no, I saw it at the store and I'm like, wow, is that huge?
And yeah, really, that's about it. I mean, a lot of the stuff that's on here, you know, JLA Salvation Run did 3,346 units. Dr. Fate Countdown to Mystery, I think, got off really lucky and actually managed to sell 1,892 units.
That was the one where they finished up the book, right? The Steve Gerber one?
Yeah, sort of. It was like a choose-your-own-adventure at the end.
Right.
I'll admit, I didn't like the direction they were taking the character, and it was just kind of confused to begin with. I don't blame Gerber at all for that. I suspect it was editorial mandates of, we need it to do this. And I certainly appreciated how other creators stepped in to help finish off the storyline, but I found it to be immensely unsatisfying.
Well, they're going to have a series spin out of that. Remember that? They're going to have an ongoing series spin out of that at book.
Well, they were also going to have one at Marvel spin out of the Captain Universe one-shots they did.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, it was about 2-3 years ago now. It's never going to happen.
Right.
They've since killed the guy off over in the Annihilation stuff. Anyways, one of those things. It always annoys me when they say they're going to spin something out into a series, and it just never comes out.
No.
But Dr. Fate's a character they got to figure out what they're going to do with.
Yeah, he's the new Hawkman. What are we going to do with him?
Hawkman's getting to be the new Hawkman.
It is, yeah. You're right.
I'm really, really enjoying the Ran-Thanagar War, but the Hawkman special, I was shocked by how it managed to untell Hawkman's origin.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're a Hawkman fan, go pick it up. It was actually a really good story. I mean, I'm liking what Jim Starlin's doing, and while it untold the origin, it at least was nice enough to do it in continuity, if that makes any sense.
Well, Doug Zavicia and I talked about that in the Word of Tomorrow's TuneIn podcast, and Doug did the Hawkman companion, and we touch on that, the undoing of his origin, or the reboot of his origin, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Unraveling is a good word, too.
Unraveling, yeah.
But that's one where the Tomorrow stuff is just a great resource for some of these characters where they're so convoluted.
Mm-hmm. That was the word we used. Convoluted.
Well, the whole reason I picked up the Hawkman companion is, I mean, I've read Hawkman since the Shadow War back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, things were pretty straightforward as to what was going on and who was who and what Earth they were on. But once you hit Crisis on Infinite Earths, Zero Hour was the big one, and a few reboots in between with Hawk World and so forth. For my money, Hawkman's and his extended family are the most convoluted aspect of the DC universe. And if you ignore them, continuity makes sense.
Yeah.
Because his son, at one point, was Dr. Fate, so that brings in all that mess.
Exactly, yeah.
Because that was Hector Hall. His wife was Fury on Earth 2, which was the Earth 2 equivalent, essentially, of Wonder Girl, so that brings in Donna Troy and that whole mess. And, you know, you can work at one or two. I mean, there aren't that many other characters that are so, you know, radioactive with continuity, retcons, recons, and whatever else. It's just, it's staggering. All in all, it was a decent month for the trades. Quick thing on the price points. I've gotten to where I've charted where things tend to break out, what's most popular price. 15 items at $14.99, I approve. 12 items at $19.99, I'll accept. 11 items at $24.99, a little more expensive than I'd like, but at least we're still seeing a decent percentage down at the cheaper price points.
Mm-hmm.
And really, at the $14.99 or below, we've got 41 items. So at the $20 or below, we've got 70 items. So trades are still, you know, not all that expensive. Collected editions, I should say. And when I use the term trades in these episodes, I'm of course talking collected editions in general. And if I mean trade paperback specifically, I'll reference it as such. But everyone mm-hmm. knows that.
Everybody knows it, right?
Sooner or later, somebody's going to argue the semantics, though. It always happens. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Decent month. Be nice to see the average getting a little higher and a couple of more of these things doing a little bit better. But there's just so many trades coming out. Not everybody is going to get them. Not every store is going to get them. And certainly with this economy, I don't fault either the readers or the stores for that.
Mm-hmm.
So what's coming up on your show?
Well, I just did my Halloween episode.
Cool.
In which I talked about the House of Mystery and the House of Secrets.
Oh, cool.
And how really House of Mystery stayed House of Mystery throughout its run. But the House of Secrets was, it merged into a couple other titles and became a new title. And then that title shut down and was started up again. And, you know, that it got to be a little convoluted. And so I kind of straightened the whole mess out. And I tell you how it ties into Neil Gaiman's Sandman series with Cain and Abel and all of those characters. So it's a fun little history lesson this year.
Awesome. That's good. I haven't listened to it yet, and I'm looking forward to that. So.
Yeah, I think it's fun. It was good. I like doing the Halloween episodes. What about you? What's going on with your show?
Well, let's see.
Or your shows.
It's one show, just different types of episodes. What do we got going on? We've, of course, got the Weekly Comics Spotlight. We talked about this past week, Dynamo 5, number 17, I think it was, Ghost Rider 28, and the Jimmy Olsen special for the Superman stuff.
Who's on Ghost Rider these days?
It is Jason Aaron is doing the writing.
Jason Aaron, that's right. That's what I thought, yeah, of Scalped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got on because I had gotten the Danny Ketch series in the 90s.
Okay.
But I've pretty much skipped most of the Ghost Rider stuff for the last 5 to 8 years or something. And they were bringing him back. Actually, they apparently brought him back in issue 23, but didn't do a really good job of promoting that until 28, so I popped on there. So, yeah, we talked about that, what we thought of the story and the art, and had very differing opinions on the two in terms of Bob and I agreed on things and agreed we liked the story better than the art. But definitely go check that out. We've been cranking out back issue spotlights like there's no tomorrow. We have done recently the Longbow Hunter.
Yes, that was good.
That was a lot of fun. That was a good read. We did Astro City. We have going up, we're recording this the night before Halloween, so on Halloween, doing a dual-purpose theme episode for both Halloween and therefore horror. What could be scarier than politics for the upcoming election and stuff? We decided to cover Concrete, the comic's most famous political speechwriter, and talk about the first 4 issues of that. Have you read Concrete?
I have not read Concrete. I've always wanted to, though.
Great stuff. Great stuff. You need to find me a place that has the collected short stories from the Dark Horse Comics Presents, because I've never hunted that down, and I want to read those.
Oh, okay. I'll see what I can do.
But excellent stuff. That goes up Halloween Day.
Okay.
And then we've already recorded a discussion on the first of the 2 Justice Society trade paperbacks they did.
Oh, good.
And this is the run from All-Star Comics.
Okay.
Because, of course, they've got Justice Society, Justice Society of America, JSA. They've got a bunch of these trades out. And, again, this is the one from the late 70s, mid-70s.
Good.
So that was fun. We're not going to do the second volume, but I have since read it. And, ironically, it's sitting here on my stack of trades that I've since collected the issues for. So I'll at some point probably be giving some of these things away, as I don't think I need them any longer.
Hey, real quick. Coming up on the Tomorrow's Tune-In podcast that I do every month,
mm-hmm.
I'm talking to Eric Nolan Wellington and the New Modern Masters series, and that new book is on Mike Ploog.
Oh, cool.
And then we also, at the tail end of it, I talk a little bit about Alan Davis, because the first Modern Masters book that Eric did was on Alan Davis, and we kind of got into discussion about the whole Captain Britain omnibus that's coming out.
Oh, cool.
So we talked a little bit about that.
Alan Davis is an amazing artist.
Yeah, good stuff. I can't wait for that omnibus to come out.
I can't, because that's one I'd be tempted to get, and those things tend to be a little expensive.
But not until March, so save your money.
Yeah, yeah. So what else? We've done a couple of roundtable discussions, did one on collecting now versus then. We're thinking about doing one on Star Wars. We got the previews, spotlight, and interview episodes coming up. We're going to talk with Jay Farber of Dynamo 5. We actually have already recorded that part. We're going to talk to, I'm blanking on the other 2 names. The comics are Hexed and, crap, I'm totally blank. This is what happens when I don't have notes in front of me. So yeah, we've got had a couple good interviews and stuff, and, you know, we encourage people to send in submissions for the preview spotlight. Just a quick, you know, minute or two clip on what came out in previews that caught your interest. And, you know, we do these every month, so whenever the previews comes out, we try to get the episode up 2 weeks after that, so we close submissions about 9 days after previews comes out.
Okay.
So it comes out on a Wednesday. Not that Saturday, but the Saturday after that is when we close down submissions usually. So, and again, we're trying to do a nice, tight, focused episode here on, you know, just what people found in the previews catalog that looked interesting, because we firmly believe that if you tell your retailer when the orders are initially due, they'll actually order it and get you what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you wait until, hey, this just came out this past week and I want it, well, either it's at the store or it's not, and by that point it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
More so if it's not. If it is, hey, great, you're in luck. So totally open submission policy on that, and we want to have as many different voices as possible. And that's different from, and I know there's been a little confusion on this, but the preview spotlight episodes are very different from our previews teleconference, which again we do the second Friday after previews is released. So that'll be on November 7th or whatever that Friday is this time around. And that's just an informal, free-form discussion on Skype. You can find instructions on the comic book page forum on how to get into the call, where we just go through previews from front to back, but certainly not page by page, because that would take forever. And we just talk about what caught our eye, what we're thinking about, and I find it very helpful both in terms of deciding what new comics to get and what comics I might want to drop.
Yeah, that might be more important.
Oh, yeah, God. I finally started getting to where I'm tracking the individual titles I'm getting and kind of tagging them as to, okay, this is a limited series, this is ongoing, this is over, this is one I'm just sampling, and I'm gonna see if I can start throttling back just a little bit, because I am perennially like about 100 comics behind these days.
Oh, jeez.
I've never caught up from San Diego from when I got back. You know, I got 3 weeks behind there, and I've still got a few things from late July.
Did you catch up from when you were in Japan?
Yeah.
You did.
I was caught up before I went to San Diego.
Oh, good.
That was not easy, but it was doable. But we were doing one or two podcasts a week. Now we're at about three, and I'm starting to wonder if that's why I'm not catching up on my reading. It's fun. I like doing it, but, you know, at this point, you know, I like reading too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's not much activity on the forum for me to be reading, so either people need to step up and keep me busy there, or I got like 9 drawer boxes full of back issues to be reading and another one or two on order. So I got things I can be doing, folks. But nah, this is good stuff. It's fun. I enjoy talking about comics. At some point, we'll have you back on for a roundtable discussion on something or other.
Yeah, that'll be fun, for sure.
So if you've got a topic you want to talk about, let us know. And if any of the listeners have a topic you want to talk about, let us know. That's how the Collecting Then and Now got started. That was a suggestion by one of our listeners, Randy, and he was getting back into comics, had some questions, and we'll probably do a follow-up on that, on just if you are getting back into comics, you know, here's some titles to check out, and you know, see if we can get some people back into reading comics that may have lapsed for a bit.
Cool.
That nice, long, rambly answer to your question of what have I got going on the podcast these days?
Man, you are way too busy. Way too busy. You got to work one of these days, too, you know.
Yeah, I know. That's what they keep saying at the office.
All right, John. Well, I think I'm spent.
All right. Well, I think that wraps this up then.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or excuse, N items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions. They're not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists, is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside of Diamond Comics distribution channels is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath, logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.